Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Think Exchange podcast. I have with me the COO of Times Music, Mandar Thakkar. Mandar, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today. It's a real pleasure to have you here. And let's just start off with a little information about Times and Times Music. Times is one of the biggest media groups in India, if I'm not mistaken. And the music side is one of the largest labels and music groups in India, correct?
Yeah. Firstly, Mark, thanks for having me on the podcast. And I'm, you know, quite happy to be here.
The
Times of India group is actually the largest multimedia, news, media, entertainment conglomerate in South Asia, not just India.
Right.
The group has been progressively, it's actually a 178-year-old group. So we pretty much own most of the major media, print, television, magazine, radio, internet, you name it, and we are present in those businesses again that fall under media or entertainment. You know, lately we've so the music company Times Music has been in existence since 1998.
Right.
And we've pretty much been a boutique label from that point of time till the last 5 to 6 years that I've been here. I was brought in to help transform usual label stuff from a regular label to a digital and a music publishing house.
Right.
The group has interests in making feature films. So we have a film production company. We own the number one radio network in the country. We have television music channels. We also actually own Gaana, which basically means song.com, like a Gaana.com, which is sort of like India's Spotify. So between Saavn and Gaana, they basically rule the streaming marketplace here. So because of so much of music interests, Times Music plays a central pivotal role with its group when it comes to music strategy, and things like that. So we're both a label and a music publisher, and representing roughly about 21,000 odd music tracks and songs. And we also are sub-publishers in the South Asian region for Warner Chappell and for India for Peer Music, besides other small publishers.
Okay, so at the end of the day, what struck me is that Times Music is really, it's a lot more than just a label or a publisher. It's really when you look at the Times Group, it's a vertically integrated, yeah, I love using that phrase,
yes.
A vertically integrated company.
Yeah, it sounds really corporate for the music.
Exactly.
But yeah.
You have the Motion Picture Group, which is Bollywood, which is music. Then you have the distribution, and then you have the streaming, which is sort of, it's just as much radio as it is distribution. So that's a marketing avenue as well. Really quite interesting. So this has been, I take it that this has been under your watch that all of this has really started to happen, because it sounds, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like when you came in, Times Music was really, more than anything else, a label that sounds like it was serving the Motion Picture Group. Would that be a good assumption?
No, it wouldn't, because the Motion Picture Group within Times is actually relatively new, the last couple of years stopped.
Okay.
But Times Music had been pretty much, in the entire sort of news media behemoth that the group is, I think Times Music was really, one boutique label just doing the label business. And I think that's really where it was. And my coming here was with a strategic intent to try and put the business on a faster track, to be able to make a business out of what existed and align it to what the future is, whether that's digital, whether that's other income from brands, whether, maybe just grow beyond just a record label and a publisher into a full-fledged music company. I hate to use the word 360. I think it's as stupidly corporate as it comes. But I would say that we'd love to grow into a simple, wholesome music company that serves multiple interests.
Yeah,
and that's really been our vision.
That makes a lot of sense. And relative to the group itself, how does the group see music strategically in terms of its, media holdings on the whole and the way that it interacts with the marketplace?
Like I said before, Mark, the Times of India group is a media and entertainment group, really today, from just being a media group, right? And in India, most things are matched together.
Right.
News, hard news, if you look at some of the hard news channels, they're as entertaining as anything else. Our understanding of cinema is very strongly focally rooted into Bollywood, which is again an entertainment medium. Right.
Right.
Just Bollywood movies are not necessarily cinema as much as they are full-blown, 3-hour song and dance, musical, entertaining films, features. So, you know, entertainment actually forms a far larger fabric of everyday Indian life. And
right.
I think it's with that sort of intent that Times Music was created at one of those things. So I think the group probably over the last couple of years sees Times Music a bit more strategically within the entire music play. Like I said, there's Ghana, there's Radio Mirchi, there's film production business. So we are sort of nestled in very well. We understand the music rights business. We understand the music licensing, music exploitation business. We have a fantastic A&R team. So we understand the creation of music and video and stuff like that. So that's really our role within anything else.
You're looking at it more than just, the label or publisher role. It's more of a sort of enabler of music for the group's activity.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think, if you have to compare us, I would imagine there was always a separate music label and a music publisher, and that wasn't the case in India because, you know, all rights are bought all in, which basically means that the label ends up having both because, you know, we're a Bollywood film musical-driven economy. We're not necessarily only an artist-driven economy. So the paradigm and the structure changes. Having said that, you know, newer organizations like BMG and Cobalt have this sort of joint structure, which is very new in the West, about label side, the publishing side and all put together into one company. We've always had that structure, and our structuring even internally at Times Music has always been that. We've always believed that all of these things in today's world are different sides of the same coin. Right now, that coin is not necessarily two-faced. It's probably more like a cube, but it's one cube. Right. So that's the way we see our business growing.
We talked about the business a little bit, and then I want to get to the music in a few minutes. But why don't you tell everybody a little bit about you? How did you get into the music industry?
Well, I mean, this is all that I knew to do at that point, or rather understood that I should do. You know, the thing is, at that point, when you're a young kid in Bombay in India, and you're talking about 1989 or 1990, and you make a decision that you want to get into the music business, and you look around, and there's hardly anything to get into. So there were no record companies, really. I think there was only CBS at that point of time. There was no music television. The radio was really government-run, state-owned FM radio. The gigs were really, there was no real original independent music. Even Bollywood, whilst it was around, wasn't really a very cool scene. So I ended up, I grabbed the lowest hanging fruit I could find. So I became like a roadie and a sort of assistant lighting designer. God knows what that meant, but I became one. Then I just planned to work with, I was actually fortunate to work with India's biggest band at that point of time, and they sadly don't exist anymore. But it was a point where you could just call up and land up. So I just landed up at the most famous rock venue that I knew, and I just forced myself into the business. I mean, I've operated follow spots to fixed traffic, to done everything, and then. Well, I then moved on to managing a band, which was a fairly successful band, which we called Crisis at that point of time. But again, that is the point that MTV was and Star TV, which was sort of like the dawn of satellite television in Asia. And this is pre-News Corp buying Star TV. So MTV was all there. And, the lead singer of the band and I, decided to move to Hong Kong. Because there was nothing better to do here. And, that's really, honestly, that was all the savings that I had. So I couldn't even get to the time. So we went to life, finding fame and fortune in Hong Kong. Like I said, my friend, really, really very, very close friend, who's the lead singer of the band, he had a girlfriend who later married. She was working there. So I figured, I could stay with them and try and get some gigs and stuff like that. And again, I got lucky because I just forced myself into the Hong Kong music scene, and I got hired by one of the biggest Asian regional promoters. Who used to run DMG in Asia at one point, Anders Nelson. So I spent 2 years almost in Hong Kong working with, you know, massive concerts and regional tours from B.B. King to Elton John to Alexis to Bob Dylan. And then that really gave me a nice sort of international experience of working tours, dealing with management. And my job there was to develop the Indian market. And at that some point of time around then, MTV was being checked out by Rupert Murdoch, and he started his own music station called Channel V. Headhunter. And again, I was in the right place at the right time. And they said, hey, we're starting this in India, and you seem to have some level of experience out. You understand everything in here. Why don't you join us? So, and that to me was a big takeoff point for my career, because I was part of the first initial setup team of music television in this country, pretty much under the moniker of Channel V. And that was a really good run for maybe 6, 7 years or 8 years, where we actually built up really path-breaking music television in India under the larger sort of satellite broadcast onslaught that was happening to the country. And, you know, you have to realize that this was kind of late 94 all the way till end of 2000 that this sort of run happened. And at that point of time, you know, I was getting bored of television. We did some pretty innovative things in India. But I won't bore you guys with that. And at that point, the internet and mobile industries were really, again, I felt the urge to move on. So I basically said, look, I don't have anything to do, but I would love to move on. And I bumped into somebody who used to run MTV in Asia, who's now a really, really close friend and a mentor. He just said, we were starting Soundbuzz, which was Asia's first digital music distribution company. Luck came in my way, and I grabbed the opportunity when it came. And so I started India for Soundbuzz again, which became pretty big as a digital distribution, a music distribution company. We had contracts with all the telcos, and you know, this is the time when we decided Soundbuzz was starting. Naxxon just happened, and that was like, bingo, shit, have we lost? You know, did we just chuck away our corner officers, take Sam, take us, and then suddenly have, you know, Sean Fanning deciding what he wanted to do? That is a bit of a shock, but we, you know, like any other startup, we navigated choppy waters for almost 9 years, went from strength to strength, built up what was then called Club Nokia, which later on became Nokia OV. We've been the first sort of engagement platform in Asia. And Soundbuzz was then very successfully acquired by Motorola, who wanted to create Motor Music as their sort of equivalent to iTunes or to Nokia OV Music. And they saw, you know, I mean, one of the earliest Soundbuzz investors was a company called Creative Technologies. I'm not sure you've heard of them, Mark, but basically invented. Oh, you do, right? So Creative,
of course,
is more known for its speakers and other stuff, but importantly, they invented the sound card, which basically gave the concept of having sound in your PC. And Creative actually created, I think, the world's first MP3 player. It was called the Creative Zen, and their reason to invest in Soundbuzz was way before the Apple iTunes model took up. Very, very ahead of her times. And the company was pretty technologically far, far before actual reality, in terms of market happening and stuff like that. Like I said, Motorola acquired Soundbuzz in 2008 successfully. We worked with Motorola to create Motor Music in multiple markets. And, you know, beyond that, Motorola had its own share of problems and so on and so forth. Again, I exited the company and I consulted for some pretty big names, more on the management side and stuff like that too. And the Times of India was a client. So Times Music, I was consulting with to create a digital sort of roadmap. And we then decided that, maybe I need to just roll up my sleeves and do this full time. And
The question that I have for you, in digital distribution in the South Asian marketplace, would I be right in thinking that one of the primary areas for digital distribution I would say over the last, say, 20 years has been mobile more than anything else because of the way the market is? Or is that an incorrect assumption? How does that shake out?
No, you're bang on. I think the world is sort of hearing mobile and going gaga over it and calling and putting things as mobile first over the last, I think, 1 to 2 years. But markets in Asia, Southeast Asia, North Asia, or India have been mobile-only markets.
Yeah.
You know, the markets like India basically jump technology. So the point, you know, when you had a VHS player that had movies in there, you jumped off into a VCD, VCD turned into a LV or whatever, so on and so forth, and a DVD. But markets like India basically just jumped everything else and jumped straight on to a VCD and a DVD. We never really had the LV in between. Or even if you look at mobiles and pagers, you know, the moment the pagers launched, mobile happened, and then the pagers died a natural death in India. We never even sort of saw what would happen with pagers. So what I'm trying to say is that because India didn't have a large internet mobile legacy where natural progression happened, the moment we got into it as a country, when the country much matured off, all the new technologies were being deployed in these markets. And now what's happening is because of these are greenfield and growth markets where consumer behavior is randomly and radically different from anywhere else in the world. It's very unpredictable. These markets have what are very high is something called a value proposition, which basically means, I hate to call it that people want something free here. I think people are very conscious about the buck that they're spending.
Of course.
And that creates a very different paradigm of understanding and of usage of mobile technology apps and whatever else that comes in. So a lot of the new technology is actually tested in these markets first before it's deployed in global markets, just because of the randomness of the user, the level of user authentication tests that happen. So by that sense, I would, yes, you're right, I would call these not mobile first, but mobile-only markets. The second thing is that there are no, your basic form of entertainment has really been the television and the radio set in a very large part of the country. You know, I mean, if you look at India, it's a huge size place, right? If you take the five metros and the other five mini metros out, the rest of the population isn't as lucky as the metros to have world-class theaters and whatnot, right? So when the mobile happened, you're basically now dependent on that as your primary communication device, your primary entertainment device, and your primary necessity tool. So, I mean, at one point, even Nokia had a pilot program where farmers would get the share price of crops as they moved up and down pretty much on a single USSD phone, which was way back, 15, 20 years back. Even doing a smartphone for that. Stuff like ringback tones, which basically, if I send a ringback tone, I don't hear it, but my callers hear it. You know, stuff like that still exists in India as a long tail of the, and rapidly evolving technology. So what I'm trying to say is that the mobile takes a far central role in this country more than it would in the West, right? My driver has two cell phones, and these are the newest branded Samsung phones that he's carrying. He does FaceTime, but he does a Skype video call. He's on the phone. He's watching movies on the phone when the car waits. So, it's a fairly kind of evolved behavior, not just of the sort of SECA kind of consumers, but also like an SECC and D kind of consumers that basically don't have any other luxuries. And your only real necessity and the luxury mix is a cell phone on a mobile.
Right. And that was really the point that I wanted to bring out is that in South Asia, as well as I think there are other markets that I can point to as well. Brazil is another one. Eastern Europe is another where the traditional methods of distribution in, let's say, places like Japan or the United States, where you have, ubiquity in television, ubiquity in VCRs, ubiquity in cable, ubiquity in traditional music players, had a slower transition towards using mobile as an entertainment platform. And in comparison to these other markets where you didn't have the infrastructure for what people would say is, I would say, probably pre-2000 distribution methods. So going back to everything that we were talking about, with music. Everything that you had to do with music and entertainment in general, distribution, promotion, delivery delivery of marketing, all of it had to be oriented towards mobile, which I think is a really interesting sort of way to look at the world. And when you look at people that are using their mobile phones as their primary device, what are the differences that, and we'll get back to sync in a minute, but I want to go down this road a little bit. What are the differences that you found, you know, in your observation, looking at how people consume entertainment in general and music specifically in the South Asian market?
I think different strokes for different people and different markets. Entertainment in India, and of course, you know, the world is changing pretty much, but I think still for a majority of people is Bollywood cinema and music,
right?
Song and dance films, right? I mean, that forms a larger fabric of society. There is a burgeoning indie independent music scene that, again, also merges very well with Bollywood. I mean, the thing is that the top 10 music composers in Bollywood are all ex-rock musicians. There's a very nice sort of merger happening between the indie and the mainstream worlds. But what tends to happen is entertainment is, like I said, for, you know, distances are big in this country. You know, your lives are not necessarily as comfortable as they are in the West. So what tends to happen is the very little time that you have, you would ideally divide it into two things. You would spend that with your family, and you most probably come from a joint family where you're living with, like, maybe 7 to 10 people, perhaps. So your private time with your spouse, with your kids, all of that is sort of valued because you're only getting that much in a day. What I'm talking about is quality of life. Now, yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of Indians really enjoy great quality of life. I enjoy great quality of life. I'm talking about mass scale consumers, right?
So, of course,
you know, there's work to do, there's home to take care of, and entertainment in many cases used to be relegated to the weekend when you saw a movie on television or you went out with a family to a theater, and that would be a cost as well, right? You know, take out your family, 2 kids, spouse, travel up and down, get them some popcorn or whatever. I mean, the whole package would cost an average sort of average Indian who really doesn't earn in the great monthly salaries. It would cost them, right? I think what happened is that, so in this case, while entertainment already existed, the devices to reach that entertainment were limited.
Right.
It's almost like appointment snacking, if it's a very old television term, right? Whereas now, the whole on-demand concept of being sitting with a smartphone that would, you know, I mean, nobody really, this is not Apple country. I mean, so it's really Android country. And what tends to happen is in this country is the local manufacturers and the Chinese and the Korean manufacturers that far outsell any of the other handset brands. So you've got great 4K quality video screen phones anywhere between in a sub, let me calculate that in US dollars. I think in a sub $450, you'll get a fantastic phone. So by and large, everyone's these days carrying a nice, you know, sexy-looking phone. And now they're saying, look, all these services are available to me at really cheap prices. Data and voice are the cheapest in the world here in India. So everyone's sort of jumping in and consuming more and more music, more and more movies, more and more sports, news, what have you. So that has created, again, the ripple effect has created a spurt in demand for more content, for more music, for more entertainment products. So now we've got an entire industry generational shift centered only around creating music or movies or other content for smartphones, like anywhere else in the world, except that in India, it's accelerating really, really rapidly. So that's really one part. The second part you should understand is YouTube here plays a very large role, you know, because the development of YouTube has been different from the West. I think YouTube has been developed in the West primarily on the back of user-generated content, whereas in India, it's developed as an alternative to television. And I think those are the fundamental differences in consumption of YouTube. And you'd be surprised to know that a majority of uptake in YouTube's growth is pretty much still on the mobile, really not on the PC or any LAN-connected device. So all of these lead back into a higher consumption of entertainment, and pretty much the same with the rest of Asia as well. I don't think that behavior changes well. It's just the kind of entertainment that you're consuming changes. Like Singapore really doesn't really have a great massive, you know, 50-year legacy of entertainment. So they would consume a lot more international repertoire.
Right.
Because markets like China would consume a lot more Chinese and a lot more international. Markets like India, where almost 90% of it is really local music, and international music plays a tiny but growing part out of it.
You know? Of course. And you know, this all makes sense because, you know, you look at the way that devices and distribution methods drive consumption. When you look at, I would say, like, let's say, pre-mobile South Asia versus South Asia now, the primary method for people to discover music other than radio and listen to music has been actually going and seeing Bollywood films, right? Would that be a good assumption? So now,
I think,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're asking whether the primary mode of discovery of music was for Bollywood films.
Yes.
Still, and it's, I think the reason being that, like I said, Bollywood is, these are song and dance musicals, right? Like any other Western musical, except that these are 3-hour extravaganzas, right? So that's your
right.
massive multimedia platform that exists. So for it's a marketer's wet dream, really.
Right.
And the thing that I would like to add is that Indians and South Asians, to a certain extent, Southeast Asians, have always been a YouTube-ready generation because music wasn't necessarily consumed separately. I'm now talking about commercial music, not spiritual or classical, right? I'm talking pure commercial music.
Of course.
It was always consumed through Bollywood, and which necessarily meant that you would watch cinema while consuming that music. So every song had a link to an actor, to a situation in the movie. And what that would mean is that this is a, you know, there's been scores of generations of Indians and South Asians who actually grown up consuming music along with video.
Right.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, a sort of a, I would say even more than a soundtrack driven marketplace for music, it's a multimedia driven marketplace for music from its onset. So whenever you're looking at the distribution of music, you're always, it's like there was MTV before there was MTV almost, you know, that when you would go to the cinema, part of the reason that you were going to the cinema was to listen to new songs and to find out what else was happening musically, which is, I think, a little bit different of an experience than we have here.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know, I may sort of correct you a little bit there, but
okay,
I don't think people specifically went to discover new music. I think it just that was the only platform that was available where music, commercial music, was interwoven into movies. So a lot of the music that we've grown up in our childhood has all come from the movies. And that
right.
is the case. But it wasn't necessarily that, okay, here's a movie and we're going to discover some new band. No, I don't think it was that. It's just that, you know, the music is so interwoven into the fabric of the movie that
right.
you would end up going to watch the movie, but end up coming out saying brilliant songs and then probably go out and purchase the soundtrack or whatever.
And that's exactly what I was getting to. So thank you for making that clarification. Basically, you know, it was a discovery method. Basically for music, you know,
yeah,
cinema was a discovery method for people in a way that it's not usually for people here. So bringing this all back to, from platforms to actual content, in terms of the music that people consume, is it, and in terms of the music that you distribute at Times Music, part one, is most of what people consume in terms of music still Bollywood music? And secondly, what is the mix at Times Music in terms of the types of music that you work with? Is it primarily Bollywood, or is it, or do you really look at a variety of different genres and types?
So to answer your first question, yes, largely it's still Bollywood music that is the most widely heard form of music. And, you know, quite honestly, the music is just pop and local, nice pop, hip hop, any kind of mainstream top 40 sounding music. It's just that it's in a film and hence it's called Bollywood music. That's the only difference. If you hear some of the tracks, they're as cool as any other pop song.
Right.
Just that because they come from a movie, it's just called Bollywood, more of a, not a classification of the style of music, but more really a classification of where it comes from. So that
right.
It's instantly identified with a movie. So that's really what it is. So that's one. The second thing is, in terms of a repertoire mixed at times music, we have about 21,000 tracks, and those keep increasing as we acquire smaller labels and libraries and so on and so forth. But I would say we actually, strangely enough, began our journey in 1998 as a house of spiritual and devotional music and stuff like that. And that still, it still remains a very primary a stronghold. We still retain a primary stronghold within that market, because in the CD era, this gave us a very high margin turnover. So the label was pretty much known for that.
Right.
And about, you know, between, I think the last decade or so, we started aggressively trying to buy some soundtracks and, you know, a lot of the DJ music, remix music. We also distribute some of the biggest names in EDM, Above and Beyond, Paul Van Dyk. So all of
right.
them distributed by us here in India. And over the last 6 years that I've been here, and with the support of, you know, the group and its shareholders, we've been very busy acquiring a lot of Bollywood soundtracks, creating a lot of new pop material, sort of steering ourselves away into a slightly larger, I hate to use the word commercial, but I think a larger, wider breadth of music.
Right.
If you have the mix today, we still are not primarily a company dependent on Bollywood. I would think that we've got about 15% only of our repertoire in Bollywood. The rest is split between various film genres and some international. But I would see in the next medium to, I think the medium to long term, you would probably see the company having roughly a 50-50 mix. That's the way
okay.
I would position it.
Right. And that gives an idea, I think, to the people who are listening of just how important, from a strategic point of view, Bollywood music is. It's the, you know, if that's where the company is headed, that means that it's something that it sounds like you really are making a priority for the future.
Well, I mean, let me take a step back and say, yes, it will be a priority. But Bollywood is like, you know, the business model of all of this is radically different. You know, in the West, you look at an act, you say, wow, this, you know, this act is great songs, so really a potential
yep.
to become stars, and you pair them up with songwriters, and then you know, work with them, you tour with them, you build them up to superstardom. Whereas in India, I think it's really a bit of a stock market mentality. So you're not really, as companies, we have very little musical contribution to do to Bollywood, right? So
right.
you're sort of buying this film soundtrack that, you know, anywhere from 2 million to, you know, 2 million to 5 million to $7 million. And these are all really expensive propositions. You know, all the soundtracks don't really work. So in my
right.
view, it's almost like a bit of a gambling then. And to tell you the truth, I actually absolutely deplore that kind of model where, you know, we're sort of doing the jobs of traders. But
yeah.
I think it's what it is. And I would see that Indian companies would evolve in the next, between maybe about 2 to 5 years or to 7 years, into companies that actually create their own films and hence their own music. Some companies have started doing that. At the Times of India, we have two separate companies doing that, but we collaborate a lot together. But I would see that the Indian, a very typical Indian music business would eventually evolve from just being a label to a label publisher and perhaps a film producer themselves. I think that's really where the industry is heading into.
And that's a really interesting point, because I was just thinking about that. Like, where do you guys get involved in terms of the creative process, if at all? Are you involved in the creative process or when it comes to, well, all types of music as a group, and specifically your part of the group? Or are you seen by the motion picture group as more of a sort of a distribution partner and a marketing partner?
Okay, so I'll answer that on behalf of the industry, and I'll answer that on behalf of us. I think, you know, we'll take the Times first. I think our internal objective would be to be able to aid our group companies in creating music. That is really on the creative side, thanks to Music Strength. You know, we have a fantastic A&R team. The music people that runs in our blood. And I think at the core of our business, how much ever I talk about margins and distribution and publishing and everything else, the core of what we do, what we love doing, remains creating music and the people.
Right.
And that's really how the rest of our companies, either within our group or externally, can sort of use us. Having said that, yes, we have a global distribution platform, and that's available to anyone and whoever wants to use it, whether it's a sister company or somebody outside. Right. Now, from an industry point of view, when it comes to creation of Bollywood music, there's basically maybe a label or two who are deeply into Bollywood who actually work closely with the film producer to create and craft this hits. But a majority of labels just don't, and which is really where I find the link breaking, that we're actually seen as a mere financier of music rights. Like, there are people who buy satellite rights or cable and, you know, television rights or internet rights or so on and so forth. So the way the studio model works in India is that you basically secure your movie future and your revenues by selling these different rights to different people. And that is like the vicious circle, that you're always ending up paying a minimum guarantee to somebody else, and that hits you at the back.
Right.
So yeah, so there's very, very little creative control as much as would like. Having said that, I would actually say that the film producers and directors in India are actually some of the best A&R people ever, because it's not that they are suffering just because the label doesn't input. No. They actually have a great ear for music. They understand how to weave the music into a storyline. And because music is a primary driver for marketing a Bollywood film, they're particularly concerned that all the five songs in a movie are all actually hits. Typically, the music of a film is released a month before the movie itself. So that should tell you how important the role it plays.
That's actually really quite interesting. Music works as a driver of the films, and the films work as a driver of the music. So it's a sort of a virtuous circle. Yeah. You talked about the importance of music in Bollywood, and I think that says in general how important the moving image, not just motion pictures, but video is to every point of music distribution, marketing, and development. But what we would consider sync, which is actually taking music and licensing it for different projects, whether it's TV, film, or advertising, how does that market work in India and in South Asia in general, if there's a difference in terms of the way that market works? I know that there isn't per se what people here would call music supervisors or music producers on the agency level. So, you know, with that said, people still have to use music in projects. So give us a little bit of an idea as to how that works.
I would love to have given you an idea as to how that works, but there is no music supervision at sync market in India at the moment, the way it is in the West. Having said that, you know, and we've discussed this on panels, you know, in the past, Mark, is that usage of music is really not necessarily a brand new thing, but it's a recent thing, right? Most Indian commercials would always have their own music created, and like I said, at one point in India, not today, but back at one point, the word copyright meant that you had the right to copy. And what tended to happen was people would rampantly use music. But as advertising evolved, as global brands came into the country, you know, with the mobile revolution, the television stuff, with, you know, India is kind of under a massive, massive, you know, everyone's being paid with anything and everything that they can, more than they can handle, right? There's like a retail explosion, there's a consumer explosion, there's an explosion of almost every form of materialistic consumption, right? And that's creating a demand where the consumer is now so hyper-connected daily that all sort of comes back into brands, and then they market brands. So what's happening is people are now coming to the labels and the publishers and saying, hey, here's this track, and, you know, if you're a shoe company, you'd use these boots are good for walking, by whoever, right? And I think stuff like that is going on, but there's a large usage of local music, but there's also very increasing usage of international music, either the people wanting to re-record them with Hindi lyrics or being able to use the same song. And unfortunately, what's going on is that Bollywood is now recreating some of its own older hit material. I mean, they licensed two songs in two movies over the course of the last year, which have generated us a lot of income, not only in sync, But the song now has a new life because it's a recreated song and we earn long royalty from it. So what's kind of going on is that the labels and the rights owners themselves basically act as some kind of consultants to the advertising agencies. So you would, so there are no music supervisors per se in between, though I do believe that in the next 3 to 5 years, you will probably have a lot of people doing that as a function. In Asia, I believe there are a couple of large agencies that big brands like Unilever exclusively work with. And I'm seeing that as an increasing phenomena that most multinational FMCG companies are going to be working with their own internal units like you have in the West. I forgot the name, but Unilever people are pretty much very organized. Back home in India, I think it's really a question of you really have to pitch to either the film director, the copywriter, or the brand manager, or the film producer. There's no real single point of contact like a music supervisor is in the West that you go in. So I think we're at a very early stage of a market formation. And as the market keeps developing, many ad filmmakers, commercial makers, or documentary makers, or filmmakers will find that it's actually easier to license materials than to try to recreate. I guess it'll get complex at that point of time.
So it's similar to some other markets that I've dealt with, and outside of the United States and Europe and a few other countries, where the deals are done pretty much directly, where the advertiser, whether it's a brand or an agency, will just get in touch with you directly or your group and say, okay, we want to license this song. What do we do? Or we want to, and then from there, you know, you deal with them and deal with the viability and ability for them to license the song. So that that seems to me like the natural evolution of the market is that as this sort of business becomes more frequent in terms of a company's need or a creative person's need to license music, there'll be more of a structure behind it where they'll work with a person like a music supervisor as they do here or in other markets. Now, a couple of questions, because I'm pretty sure people don't know how it works, but in terms of advertising, the way it works in some countries, like the United States, an ad firm will have to pay the music company for usage of the music. In other countries, I would say specifically in East Asia, a lot of the time there is no payment to the music company because other than the back end, because they see it as a promotional opportunity, or at least that's the way that the advertising industry has told them they should see it. I don't think they want it that way. I know they don't.
This is a similar situation at one point in India. So
right. And how is it now? How is it now? Do they actually pay you for your music, or do they say,
Yeah,
you do get paid. Okay, that's good.
Certainly. We get paid a lot of money for it. Basically, Sync has become a fairly healthy source of, or rather, I would say, a growing healthy source of income. It's still random and unpredictable, more like a cherry on the pie still. But I think people are, you know, exploring this so much that I think not only Sync, but music licensing as a whole has matured really, really much.
Right.
Even at a industry level, we feel the same at an association level.
That's really quite interesting, and I would assume that the same goes for television and film and interactive, that you get when you do a Sync deal. The deal has something on the front end, meaning that you're going to get paid a fee up front, and then you have the royalties on the back end. It works in a similar way as it does in the U.S.
Pretty similar. I think, really we try and push for the front end fee to be the highest. You know, hey, we're record labels and music publishers.
Right.
You know, some behaviors don't change, right? I mean, no point shying away from it. But yeah, I think stuff like performance, not really mechanicals, but I think more performance income or stuff that would come out of the back end. Societies and stuff like that. But yeah, there would be certain level of royalties.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting to know, and I think that's interesting for the audience to know. And then, in terms of your priorities as an executive and as a group,
Where do you see Sync in terms of, you know, it's probably when you look at the, you know, the P&L, it's maybe a rounding error, a little bit more than a rounding error, I would assume. But where do you see it from a strategic point of view in the, now and in the future?
Okay, without really going into numbers, right, because we're not a listed company, so we don't really put out numbers. I think from two perspectives, I think one from a strategic perspective and the second from a monetary perspective. I think monetarily, you know, more the merrier, and I think that our digital income and our publishing income would eventually end up being equal. That's the level of faith that I have in developing markets, music licensing and sync opportunity and economy. And that's the level of focus that we're actually putting in. So what we're trying to do with our repertoire, not only ours, but even Mother Chapel's repertoire or their music's repertoire, is to basically, we spent years educating the advertising industry and feeling in the fruits that, hey, there's this repertoire, it's available. It's really economical for you to use it. There's instant recall. And I think a lot of the efforts for us over the last 4 to 5 years are now paying off today. So one thing that I would love to sort of mention is that India is a really long gestation market. There's nothing like instant revenue. It's a market under churn, so it takes a while for something to develop. But once it does, that's, you know, it's almost like a winning the slot machine in Vegas, right? Yeah, that's really one part of it. And I think the second part of it is, on a strategic level, I would, like I said, and like something I said at the start of the conversation, is that we see ourselves more as a complete music company more than anything else. And I think it would be incorrect of me to say I can see Times Music 10 years down the line, and I would say, no, I can't. Nobody can, because you don't know where the next technology disruption will come from. You don't know how fast you need to change your business to adapt to consumer needs. So I would say, on a good short to medium term, to next 3 years or 5 years, maybe, I would say that we would end up being a lot more horizontally robust, because I think the world is chasing vertical growth, where I think our strategic sort of intent is to actually be a bit more broad-based and horizontal, which means you would see us not only in the label and the publishing business, like I said, you would see us in the artist management business, you would see us in the live agency sort of business. You know, who knows, we may create one of India's biggest agencies tomorrow that works with different people.
Right. But, you know, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, Sync is something that, you know, is, I would say, just like the rest of the world, becoming a more important part of your thinking in terms of what you have to do now, as well as
no question about it. Yeah.
And
no question about it.
And then let's focus on international for a moment, because we've talked a lot about the Indian market, and I think, you know, in the South Asian market in general, and I think that's very important, because I think there's a lot of opacity when people are thinking about it, you know, and I really thank you for helping to, you know, open things up a little bit in our conversation. Now, in terms of the international market, you look at a market that I personally think has great potential for Indian music in general, and not just, you know, people that are trying to connect to the diaspora, which is large and diverse worldwide, but in general, I think that there's a lot of potential and interest for South Asian and Indian music for a variety of different types of sectors of the market. And one of those, I think, is Sync. And I think that, you know, in terms of Sync, I've seen music used in film and television, of course, but also in advertising that has a sort of a South Asian sort of feel, more and more than I have in the past. So my question to you after that statement is, number one, how important is the international market to you in general as a group? And how does Sync interplay in your strategic thinking about international?
Okay, I think to answer that question, I'll take you a step back. I think overall for even movies, you know, even on music, the international overseas markets actually pump up close to, if it's a big Bollywood movie, I think it would pretty much do between 25 to 35% of its business overseas. So there's a lot of dependency on these markets, right? There's a lot of Indians in the world. and there's a lot of non-resident Indian population, and that gives us a far wide global reach of consumers, right? So having said that, even music-wise, VC as a label, again, without going into numbers, of very double-digit growth and a double-digit percentage of our business coming in from the overseas markets. For Times Music, it's a strangely, disproportionately high double-digit percentage, but it's been growing ever since the last 6 years that we've been actively marketing our repertoire in the West, either through digital services, to our own advertising, or to our own sync deals, for that matter. Having said that, this is all not digital. I think it's really, we've been very, very active in the U.S. where we've been connecting. We have sub-publishers. We registered with everyone. We work with a lot of agencies that get our catalogs out there. And we also pitch, sitting here in India, to a lot of music supervisors in Los Angeles, for instance. And we've gotten in a lot of work that comes from there. So we, as a label at Times Music, and this I can't speak on behalf of the industry, because I do believe that we are probably the most progressive within this area. And that effort has now started paying off, where, again, a double-digit percentage of sync actually comes for us from the U.S. And that's, again, like I said, it's a direct result of the investment in time, relationship building that we've done over the last 5 to 6 years.
Right. So that's interesting. So when you look at sync, it is a strategic area in terms of the international sector of your business.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to add, yes, to answer your question, but I'd also like to add that I think, the world is sort of opening up a lot to newer forms of music.
Yes.
Migrant populations cross different shores and the world becomes a flatter place. You also have different forms of entertainment, different sounds and different visuals that then dot the landscape. And I really strongly believe that, again, in the last 5 to 7 years with the rise of the internet and the mobile and cheap sites and, migrant populations literally, traveling countries like the travel city, you've got this whole explosion of a multicultural sort of, audio and video thing that, I would not have imagined in the last, maybe 10 years ago even, that so much of our music would get used in Western television serials or movies or what have you, as much as anything used today. And I can only really attribute that, I'd love to claim because it's relationship building. But importantly, the market wasn't ready. Nobody would have taken our repertoire. So do believe that the last 4 to 5 years has seen a large explosion in different diasporas, not only Indians, but the Chinese, the Filipinos, the Russians, the Europeans. All, it's so strange that, when we go to Mirem in France, our regular cabbie, yes, we kept mentioning that, which was a really forward-thinking statement. And he said, I'm not sure whether my kids, and they're French, would end up growing in France and understanding, our culture as deeply, because they really want to go travel the world at one point, unlike some of the other nations that were pretty much a little more progressive in traveling. And I think that this, it's a free, borderless world. And when you move to that, you will find that cultures move alongside that.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good point, Mandar. I think that people, as the diversity has increased in many countries in the world, I think that also the diversity in terms of people's musical taste has both, and I'm not just talking about consumers. I'm also talking about from a professional level. Advertising firms, films, games, etc. They're all willing to take chances with different genres of music. That if you look back, I would say 20 years ago, they wouldn't have been as willing to say, we should put a Bhangra song in this video game. They wouldn't have made that choice, necessarily.
Yeah,
they would have said, it's a little too risky for us. People are going to think it's exotic. We've got to think about doing something that's like rock and roll or dance or, something that people are used to. And I think that's very interesting for us.
From a business perspective, of course, and it helps times and it helps everybody who's bringing international, you know, music that's not created, let's say, you know, in any domestic market to the international market. But it also, I think it makes for a more interesting, it makes for more interesting content at the end of the day. And I think that content creators on a professional level are looking to different types of music to accentuate the content that they're creating, to make it more distinctive. And that's where I think there's a real opportunity for music from South Asia, but music in general that's international, to play a role in terms of different projects, whether they're storytelling projects or advertising.
I understand. I completely agree.
Cool. So let's see here. So I just want to close up. So closing up our conversation now, what are some of the things that you can tell us about that are coming up for Times Music?
Really, Mark, like I said, you know, we're focusing on horizontal growth more than, sure, I mean, vertical growth is in terms of revenue, but I think growth as a company is a robust business. It's really about horizontal growth for us. So we're really excited to be in a transformative period when, you know, we've sort of, I think, perfected the label model, the publishing business is sort of self-taking care of itself, you know, as we're expanding more and more and working with more people. But I think what we're really excited about is the ability to work with a lot of newer technology. So we take a lot of funds and a lot of bets on smaller players that will eventually become bigger, working with them with our repertoire. And importantly, like I said, getting into areas that we've not done before. So it's really constant, unlike the typical label ecosystem, we think of ourselves as a startup. We're very lean, they're very hungry, and I think for us, we don't see as ourselves as being in the music business only. I mean, at every panel and at every, you know, every single place, you hear the whole thing, music must be protected, music must be, you know, we need to protect our writers, we need to protect, and so we need to encourage creativity, first and foremost. You know, I think the music industry has basically got its panties in a, you know, sort of jam by basically being too protectionist in nature, to policing in nature. And we've, you know, we somehow have convinced ourselves that we've actually opened up to the internet and, you know, and all of that. And whilst, yes, I agree, it's a far cry from the days of Napster, but the ability for us to accept that music is no longer a separate ecosystem. It's a shared ecosystem between digital players, between brands, between clubs that play music, between even the artists. The faster we realize that, the faster we'll work with eye-opening technologies, eye-opening business models, because we need to move away from this whole mentality that there is, and you know, there is a next level of, there is just this kind of way to the music. And that, to me, the new age business models of either a BMG or a Cobalt are great significant signs of that. Our business model traditionally has always been that. It's, again, we won't use the same term, vertically integrated, but maybe we can create a new term, horizontally integrated company.
Horizontally integrated. But it's true. I mean, the point that you're making is a very good one. At the end of the day, everything has been very stratified traditionally, you know, that people worked in separate, I'm being very corporate right now, so I'm going to get very corporate, but basically people have traditionally in the music industry worked in separate silos. So you had labels over here, publishers over here, live touring and booking over here. Sync was a very small part of the industry back then. Nobody really cared about that much, but Sync was somewhere if anybody cared about it. And then you had merchandising, which actually was important. And what you've seen, and then of course there's management. And what you've seen, I think, in a lot of the evolution of the industry has been a collusion of more of these sectors
from individual silos into companies, like you said, like Cobalt or like Times, or, you know, you could say Avex in Japan or YG in Korea, where you have more collusion between the different groups, that when there's planning of a act, and again, you see, I'm trying not to use 360 in terms of this, but basically when you're planning what you're going to do with an act, you say, okay, what are they doing in terms of film? What are they doing in terms of advertising? What are they doing in terms of live? What are they doing in terms of sync? Who, what brands can they work with? And, you know, how do we work together as management, label, publisher, you know, tour operator, if that's relevant, to make sure that everybody wins. And that's new thinking, I think, even now, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, that it's,
right. Yeah.
It's still, and I would say that, you know, in many markets, it's still something that's just started.
Right.
And it seems like this is something that's, and this, it seems like this is something that's really part of your overall strategy, is to have Times Music move in that sort of way as a company that works in a, I guess we're going to use horizontally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Look, I'll go back to a term that I find really, you know, we should, as a business, we should realize that there are two terms. There's either music or there's a music business. And I think it's high time that people who are in the business of music actually go out and do music and do business. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right? Because
yeah.
Let the creators play their music. But I think what tends to happen is that we get a little caught up in our own sort of, like I said, look, in our own ecosystem, and we forget that we are here to sell repertoire that is created by a musician, and that should be our primary goal, to make that repertoire really, really work well. That's justice done to musicians, in my view. And I think the more that the music industry looks up, you know, let me take a step back and sort of take you into a another company, say not the music industry, but the IT industry, for instance, or any other industry where sales are given such a high priority, right? I'm not saying the usual bullshit of quarter by quarter reportings and all of that.
Right.
No, I don't really believe in that in music industry. But I'm just saying that labels have been traditionally buyers, not really sellers. You always had people. If you have a hit track, 100 people will come to you to use it.
Yep, always.
It's very hard to proactively have foot soldiers finding little niches and users for that music, right?
Yep.
We won't have that because we're held back with saying, oh, you know, I think this music has pegged at this much value. And whilst our understanding is that, yeah, one deal worth $1 million is better than 10 deals worth less than that, what we have to understand is that one deal worth $1 million ain't going to come as regularly as it came. So we have to be able to create a slightly larger revenue stream around it, which basically means that you have to change your structure, your outlook. You cannot look at yourself as a traditional music company anymore. You have to move into a traditional music multimedia company role. And I think that's really the transformation that will ideally change the industry. The day we stop looking at the past and our greatness, and the day we say, what do we need to do and what do we need to change drastically, and what do consumers want? And I think that's really the future, in my view.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to, being able to effectively deliver what it is that consumers want, and, you know, being able to make them aware that you have it is the other part of that. Okay, well, great. Well, listen, you know, Mandar, I really want to thank you for taking time out with us today on the podcast. I think we covered a lot of ground. Not all of it was sync, but I think all of it was interesting and eye-opening for people, and I thank you for that.
Not being here, Mark. Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. And if anybody wants to get more information on the markets or on Times Music in general, you can get in touch with me at mark@syncsummit.com, and I'll be happy to field any requests to you, Mandar. Does that make sense?
That's fine. Fair enough.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much for being part of the podcast. Okay, cheers to you, too. Thanks a lot, Mandar. I appreciate it.